This parable is one of several, which include a servant or a steward receiving something valuable from his master, a landowner, even from his father. Here we have in Matthew's gospel this parable of the talents. One servant receives five, another two, and the third one. One talent was worth about 20 years of wages. So even the one who only got one talent got an extraordinary amount. In Luke's gospel, there's a parable also with three servants who are each given 10 pounds or 10 minas. 10 pounds was worth about 40 months of pay. They were given that and told, trade with what you've been given. There was the nobleman who leased his vineyard to wicked tenants. There was the unmerciful servant who owed his master 10,000 talents. That's 200,000 years of wages. There was a dishonest steward, wasted the rich man's goods and was called to give an account. And even the prodigal son, who was given his father's inheritance while his father was still alive. Clearly, there's a pattern in Jesus' parables, a pattern which reaches all the way back to the beginning. Do you remember the first creation account in Genesis? Remember how that went? God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon earth. In just a few words, the word image was repeated twice, which indicates there's something of great importance there. Being made in the image of God, Adam and Eve were given the whole of creation in order to reflect God's wise and loving designs. They were stewards of all things. They were to govern with reference to the source of the image with which they had been stamped. It's like when my dad gave me farm work to do. It wasn't just go farm however you want, but make your work reflect the way in which I farm. I'm entrusting this to you. Do it according to the source of the one who has entrusted you with this. This pattern of being entrusted with something valuable is deepened even more in the second creation account. God again gave creation, the Garden of Eden, to mankind in the figure of Adam to till it and to keep it. Now, I said in the figure of Adam because Eve was yet to have been formed from his side. Adam first had to arrive at the realization that he was different from the rest of creation and that he was alone before God created a helpmate fit for him and gave them to one another. This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. They complement and complete each other. They are helpmates, not set over one another like the rest of creation, but given to one another to help one another reflect God's wise and loving design. It does seem to me that this is where the liturgy is directing us today. Servants, stewards in the gospel, entrusted with something very valuable. And in the first reading, when one finds a worthy wife, her value is far beyond pearls. Her husband, entrusting his heart to her, has an unfailing prize. She brings him good, not evil, all the days of her life. She obtains wool and flax and works with loving hands. She reaches out her hands to the poor and extends her arms to the needy. Charm is deceptive and looks fleeting. The one who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her a reward for her labors. And the psalm, blessed are you who fear the Lord, who walk in his ways, for you shall eat the fruit of your handiwork. Blessed shall you be in favor. That word means good character. Blessed shall you be, and you'll have good character. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine in the recesses of your home. Your children like olive branch, shooting up strong and vigorous around your table. Behold, thus is the man blessed who fears the Lord. May you see your children's children is how it's concluded. husband and wife are of great value, virtuous, industrious, life-giving, and religious, helpmates complementing one another and helping one another to reflect God's wise and loving design in their relationship and in their family. How different is this Jewish and Christian view on creation and family life from the contemporary one? It begins not with the fact of creation and God's design, but with the individual's vantage point and self-discovery, and demands universal affirmation of the identity discovered and the removal of anything which limits its actualization, its being brought into being, like those restrictive roles and notions in our first reading and our psalm. The interdependence of husband and wife, the woman at home, children in general, more than one child specifically, and even the categories of male and female, those have no place, certainly no pride of place in our day. How could this radically different view have developed in such a short time? Well, it was too much to propose all at once, so incremental steps made sense. Chip away at modesty, especially in how girls and women dress. They'll like the initial attention, which will fade as boys and men become desensitized to their bodies and cease treating them respectfully and as the weaker sex. The link between sex and love and monogamy and children could be weakened through wide-scale acceptance of cohabitation, divorce, pornography, abortion, and contraception, with the last two especially helpful in gaining women's independence. Free childcare for all could be freeing too, then no one need be shackled to the home. And by replacing biological sex with gender and multiplying the number of these and getting the ACLU to defend the right of transgender boys to play in girls' sports, marriage and the categories of male and female could increasingly become meaningless and irrelevant. Detached from biology and with the transformational power of technology close at hand, each individual can now stand atop creation, ready to redefine it and reshape it at will. How patronizing these readings must seem in our day. Relics, no doubt, it will be claimed, of a male-centric worldview, which is why I find it so very helpful to look at the words that precede our selection from Psalms or from Proverbs, which go, "The words of Lemuel, king of Massa, which his mother taught him." There are figures such as this woman, Justice Barrett, I would say, and many of you, for example, who understand the power of the family intended by God to teach his wise and loving designs. Figures who do not fit the dominant narrative of our day and call into question its assumptions. Maybe there is another way besides the current project being forced upon bakers, the little sisters, and us without a shred of tolerance. Maybe we are actually part of something larger than the identities we can imagine. Perhaps living in accord with the purpose of the Creator doesn't limit us, but frees us from self-deception and evil influence. Try the apple. Perhaps the empirical data demonstrating that children and families are better off with a wife and a husband in the home indicates the truth of God's creation and his commands. What if we feared to break our friendship with God, and so were very careful to reflect his wise and loving design in our relationships with priceless human beings and the whole of creation? Might our families and communities be included among the blessed ones who share the Master's joy? There is the question, and our faith will be our answer.